Good day, this is Greg, and I'll be reading the Vermilion County News for Tuesday, November 4th, 2025. And we'll start with the front page of the commercial news. The first story today is titled School Dismissal. District 118 sends students home after anonymous threat. And this is by Christy Jankowski. Danville. Danville students were sent home not long after arriving at school on Monday, after an anonymous caller stated, "School shooting, 10 a.m. to district staff before hanging up. The district shared on their Facebook page, "Due to an anonymous threat to an unidentified school building, all schools in Danville School District 118 will begin dismissing at 8:45 a.m. today." The district added that if no one was home when students were sent home by bus, parents can pick them up at the David S. Palmer Arena. They added that district staff will be there with the students and that you should have your ID when you arrive. The district said in a post following that one, "If no one was home to receive your students, the bus will take them to the Civic Center." Eyewitness accounts at Danville High School saw police officers directing traffic, while school administrators and the school resource officers monitored the students getting onto the buses parked along Jackson Street. Officials with the Danville Police Department shared on social media that they were working with school officials around 9 a.m. "Despite what you have observed on other Facebook pages, there is no reported shooting at any Danville schools," according to the Danville Police Department. Later in the afternoon, District 118 Superintendent John P. Hart sent out a letter to parents and guardians. He said there was no confirmed danger, but thought it was best, after the anonymous phone call, to send the students home. "We know that unexpected situations like this can cause worry and disruption for our families," he said in the letter. "Please know that every decision made today was guided by one purpose, protecting our students and staff. Our district team continues to work hand in hand with law enforcement and safety officials to ensure that our schools are secure and ready for students to return." School will be in session on Tuesday, and Hart said the district will have counseling and support services for students and staff members. Police are working with the district to find the source of the threat. Due to the seriousness of the threat, District 118 administration decided to cancel all school activities and send students home. The Danville Police Department is taking this threat seriously and is actively pursuing leads to identify the caller, said Deputy Chief Joshua Webb of the Danville Police Department. They added that if you have any information, contact them at 217-431-2250 or call Vermilion County Crime Stoppers at 217-446-TIPS. Our next story is titled, City Officials Negotiate Lower Health Costs. And this is also by Christy Jankowski. Danville. As health insurance renewals come in, city employees were looking at an 18.5% increase. But city officials were told last week they were able to lower that. Human Resources and Risk Manager Kathy Corson was present at last week's committee meeting to answer questions. The city is set to vote on a 6.8% increase with a $6,000 health reimbursement account to be used to cover the $7,500 of out-of-pocket deductible for health insurance from Blue Cross Blue Shield. "So there are some people who will never end up paying anything out of their pocket," Corson said. "Because they're not big users of the insurance, or because they're not going to exceed more than $6,000 in medical for the year. Alderman Tricia Teague asked, "So if the health reimbursement account, the $6,000, the city is paying that?" Corson said yes. The company will actually monitor it and require people to actually periodically, if it exceeds a certain amount, provide proof of what they were paying, so we can ensure that they're paying for this year's stuff as well, that it is something medical. It cannot be used at a place like Meijer or Walmart to buy a TV. Alderman Doug Aherns said about the deal, "It seems like a good opportunity to try. You never know until you try it. But certainly we've looked at these and here and others, and being able to put the $6,000 up front." Mayor Ricky Williams Jr. added, "Alderman, the thing that I love about this as well, in addition to what you said, is that if someone doesn't spend the entire $6,000, it comes back to the city as well." The city will also be reviewing the 2025 tax levy and the 2026 budget during closed session on Tuesday. There was much discussion on how casino funds should be used. Aherns noted a large increase in EAV. To go from $304,021 to $442 million in just a few years is pretty amazing, said Aherns about EAV increases during the COVID pandemic. So it certainly helped our situation. Library funding cuts have been a big debate with council. Aherns has spoken out numerous times against cutting their funds, especially with a new director. "Welcome to Danville. We just cut from you what your predecessors had to work with," Aherns said. "My preference would be to see them stay at a funding level of about $2.1 million through the tax levy, which is less than they received each of the last 2 years." Another heavily discussed topic was the use of casino funds for pensions. "I would like to have a casino community benefit fund, or whatever the administration determines is an appropriate title, so that everyone will always be able to see where every penny of the casino money went," Aherns said. "In particular, the casino is projected to bring in about $2.26 million in revenue that is going into the general fund. Why don't we just tell everybody we're using the casino money on pensions? I just don't think that's the most prudent financial way for a community our size to be funding our pensions." Williams addressed Aherns' questions about the pension. "As far as our pension payments go, we were in a hole," he said. "One of their primary concerns for the city was that we were not properly funding our pensions, and so we took it upon ourselves to take that charge seriously and to make sure that we are good stewards of taxpayer dollars." Williams said at this point, they have to be 90% funded by 2040, according to state statute. "If we stay on the path that we're funded, we will be 100% funded before that time," Williams said. "If we can just hold the course for the next 8 to 10 years, then the city of Danville will have an additional $8 to $10 million a year that we can use for whatever we would possibly need." In other news, the council is set to approve a 5-year agreement with Motorola Solutions for 15 body-worn cameras for the Danville Police Department and squad video cameras, docking stations with unlimited cloud storage. Also, Potterfest is coming to downtown Danville this Friday. This is one of our biggest events of the year, and all of our downtown businesses get involved, Rena Allis said. So we're pretty excited for this one. And Lindsay Franz has been working really hard on it and has some cool, new, fun ideas that I think a lot of the community will enjoy. Yeah, moving now to the last front page item today. We have a story from Capital News Illinois titled SNAP to be partially funded in November. And this is by Maggie Doherty. Chicago. The Trump administration said Monday it would use emergency funds to partially fund SNAP benefits for November, but would not tap into other funds to provide full coverage. This means the more than 1 in 6 Illinoisans who rely on the Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program, or SNAP, benefits to buy groceries each month will get a smaller than normal share and have to wait days or weeks for their cards to be reloaded. That's bad news for Rockford home care aide Jasmine Winfrey, 34, who lives with her two children, Jaden and Yasmin. Winfrey says that with reduced SNAP benefits, she's unsure how she will put food on the table for herself and her kids. If I have to maybe not pay a few bills, then that's what I have to do because my children cannot go hungry, Winfrey said. I'm just very heartbroken, and I just don't know where me and my children's next meal may come from. So I'm very unsure, and I'm afraid. Two federal judges issued separate rulings Friday, both ordering the administration to continue funding SNAP amid the federal government shutdown. Both judges set a Monday deadline for the administration to decide whether it would provide full or partial coverage and determine where the money would come from. The judges required that the government use emergency funds appropriated by Congress to at least partially cover November benefits, leaving open the option to draw from additional funding sources to fully fund payments for the month. U.S. District Judge John McConnell Jr., in his order, cited the availability of $23 billion in funds created by Section 32 of the Agricultural Adjustment Act Amendments of 1935. The U.S. Department of Agriculture told the judges Monday that it would use $4.65 billion in emergency funds to cover half of the benefits eligible households receive for the month. Patrick Penn, Deputy Undersecretary of Food, Nutrition, and Customer Services, or FNCS, at the USDA, filed a declaration saying the department would not tap into other funding sources to provide full benefits to recipients. This means that no funds will remain for new SNAP applicants certified in November. Disaster assistance, or as a cushion against the potential catastrophic consequences of shutting down SNAP entirely, Penn wrote in the declaration to McConnell. The department said in the declaration that it had carefully considered using some of the Section 32 funds referenced in the judge's order, but ultimately decided against it. While acknowledging the legality of transferring funds between programs within FNCS, the department argued that Congress intended for the $23 billion fund in question to support child nutrition programs, including national school lunch and breakfast programs. Shifting $4 billion to America's SNAP population merely shifts the problem to millions of America's low-income children that receive their meals at school, the USDA wrote. There are no additional blocks of funding within FNCS available to supplement SNAP, the declaration noted. U.S. Senator Tammy Duckworth responded with disappointment to the partial funding decision on social media, referencing her own family's experience with SNAP. As someone who grew up counting every last SNAP dollar, this is intentionally cruel, Duckworth wrote. Hungry children deserve full bellies, not crumbs. And that's the end of the front page stories for today. We're going to turn now to the obituaries for November 4th. Our first today is for James C. Williams, James, or Jim, C. Williams, 90, of West Lafayette, Indiana, formerly a longtime resident of Danville, Illinois, passed away at 5:45 a.m. on Wednesday, October 29th, 2025, at Westminster Village of West Lafayette, Indiana. A service to celebrate the life of Jim Williams will be held at 11 a.m. on Saturday, November 8th, 2025, at St. James United Methodist Church in Danville. Reverend Donald Jackson will officiate. Cremation will follow services, with interment held at a later date. A visitation will be held from 10 to 11 a.m. prior to services on Saturday, also at St. James in Danville. Sunset Funeral Home and Cremation Center at 3940 North Vermilion Street in Danville is handling the arrangements. Memorials in Jim's name may be made to Fair Hope Children's Ministry. Burgess Earl Williams. Burgess Earl Williams was born on June 16, 1931, in Greenwood, West Virginia, the son of Ernest E. and Pauline Batten Williams. He married Lucy Jane Barker on May 1, 1954, in Winchester, Virginia. A celebration of life will be held at 10 a.m. on Friday, November 7th, at Sunset Funeral Home and Cremation Center at 3940 North Vermilion in Danville. Pastor Paul Rebert will officiate, and burial will be in Sunset Memorial Park. A visitation will be held from 5 to 7 p.m. on Thursday, November 6th, at the funeral home. Memorials may be made in Burgess's memory to the First Baptist Church. And that's the end of the obituaries for this Tuesday. We're going to turn to a story from the News Gazette titled Election 2026 Vermilion County March Primary will feature several contests. And this is by Jennifer Bailey. Danville. Several more Vermilion County candidates filed their election petitions by Monday's deadline for the 2026 primary, setting up contested races for sheriff, treasurer, and a couple of county board and precinct committee person positions. Three candidates seek to succeed retiring Sheriff Pat Hartshorn, 74, who is calling it quits after 36 years on the job. They include two Republicans, his son, Mike Hartshorn, a captain in the Sheriff's Department, and John W. Thompson, a former Danville police officer and current Vermilion County 911 Center Director, and one Democrat, Hugh Sands, a truck driver who retired from law enforcement after about 22 years. For the county treasurer's race, Darren Duncan, in office since 2017, will see opposition from financial professional Jason Whaling. Other filings include Robin Heffern for county clerk, Aaron Hurd for regional superintendent of schools, and Nate Byram for supervisor of assessments. Among candidates who filed for county board seats are District 1 Republicans Terry Prilliman and Larry Baum, Jr. For District 2, Republican Eric Luttrell. In District 3, Republicans Kevin Bodine and Tanya Hill. In District 4, Republican Vic McFadden and Democrat Carl Johnson. In District 5, Republicans Phil Jackson, Brad Watson, and Tara Outer. In District 6, Democrat Sabrina Kelly and Republican Greg Shepard. In District 7, Republicans Chris Lamar and Tim Morgan, and Democrat Mackenzie Ellis-White. In District 8, Democrat Deontay Brooks. District 9, Democrats Jim McMahon and Deanna Brenneman. Other candidates have filed for the Board of Review and precinct positions. Key dates and times in the election process include November 10th, as the last day to file an objection to a candidate. 10 a.m. on November 12th, a lottery will be held to determine the placement of the treasurer candidates on the ballot as they filed simultaneously. And January 15th, this is the last day to file a declaration to be a write-in candidate, according to Carrie Wilson, Chief Deputy County Clerk and Supervisor of Elections with the Vermilion County Clerk's Office. And March 17th, Election Day for the 2026 primary. And returning now to the commercial news from the Sports Pages Local Roundup, we have the following from Marvin Holman. The Hoopston area boys cross country team had a goal at the start of the season to have everyone make it to the IHSA Class 1A state meet. On Saturday, that goal was achieved as the Corn Jerkers took fifth at a sectional in Lyle. Owen Garrett led Hoopston area with a time of 18 minutes, 1.61 seconds to take 25th, while Eli Hastings was 26th with 18.02, Landon Freck was 34th with 18.13, Keenan Anderson was 47th with a time of 19.11, Noah Lambert was 51st at 19 and 18 seconds, and Ethan Linares was 52nd with a time of 19 minutes and 20 seconds. In a Class 1A sectional at Toledo, Oakwood Salt Fork's Callie Richardson was the only local runner to go to state with a time of 18 minutes 49 seconds, which was good for 12th. For Richardson, it is the second straight year she is going to Detweiler Park in Peoria. Last season, she finished 49th in the state meet. In Class 2A, Danville's lone representative, senior Raven Bailey, ended up with a personal best of 17 minutes and 4 seconds to take 83rd in his final prep race. And in prep football, the Bismarck, Henning, Rossville, Alvin, and Salt Fork football teams started playoff action on the road on Saturday. But the road was not kind to both teams, as the Blue Devils and the Storm fell. BHRA hit the road to play at Pena and lost 43-14. Liam Parrish had 147 yards and a touchdown for the Blue Devils, while Isaac Cahill had 58 yards rushing and a score. The Blue Devils end their season at 6-4. Salt Fork traveled to Dupo and lost 28-7. The Tigers scored all of their points before the Storm scored late in the second quarter on a 38-yard touchdown pass from Zayden Bromley to Jacob Downing. But Salt Fork could not do much against Dupo in the second half and finished the season at 5-5. And turning to some other local stories from the commercial news, we have Gold Star Mission Scholarship applications being accepted. And this is by Christy Jankowski. The Gold Star Mission has opened its 2026 scholarship program for high school students. Applications must be sent in by February 1st. The scholarships can be used for any college costs, including tuition, books, school fees, on-campus room and board, and more. Each scholarship we award carries the name and memory of a fallen Illinois service member, said Barry Tobias, president of Gold Star Mission. It's our way of ensuring their sacrifice continues to inspire selfless service and leadership in others. To apply, You must be a high school senior at the time of your application, or have a high school diploma, GED, or be currently enrolled in college or vocational school. The applications are only being accepted online at goldstarmission.org/scholarship.php and click the Complete Online button to enter. The mission founded the scholarships since 2017, awarding $317,000. The intent is to give students funds while honoring fallen soldiers in Illinois. This year, the organization is giving 34 scholarships. Our scholarship recipients remind us that the values our fallen lived by, commitment, honor, and service to others, are still alive today, Tobias said. And LIHEAP applications open for all households. This is also by Christy Jankowski. Danville, Low Income Home Energy Assistance Program, or LIHEAP, applications opened on Monday for all income eligible households. The East Central Illinois Community Action Agency assists Ford, Iroquois, and Vermilion counties. The program initially began accepting applications on October 1st for the disabled, seniors, families with children under 6, those with a disconnection notice, or those with less than a quarter of propane in their tank. Requirements for the applications are as follows. Must be at or 200% below the federal poverty level. The income guidelines are based on household size, federal poverty guidelines, state median income. To find more information, go to www.comaction.org. LIHEAP gives one-time benefits to help pay energy bills or to reconnect service. And another story by Christy Jankowski. This one is titled, DACC Qualifies for Aspen Prize. Danville. Danville Area Community College has been recognized as one of the top 200 community colleges with chance to win a $1 million award. The award is given out to two-year colleges in the United States based on their overall student success. There were 21 community colleges selected in Illinois for the Aspen Prize, which is more than any other state in the country. We are honored to be named to this distinguished group of colleges, said Greg Wolf, chair of the DACC Board of Trustees. This recognition reflects the hard work of our faculty, staff, and students, and our ongoing mission to support student achievement, strengthen workforce readiness, and help our community thrive. The Aspen Prize has been given out to high-performing community colleges since 2010 every 2 years. If a college is selected, they will go through a review process over 20 months. The final winners will be announced next spring. DACC President Dr. Randall Fletcher celebrated the announcement, saying, "This recognition affirms the transformative work happening at DACC. From workforce programs to transfer pathways, our goal is to deliver life-changing opportunities for every student who walks through our doors." And finally, DACC Library hosts Dr. John Wade. Dr. John Wade, Associate Professor of Social Science, will be at the Danville Area Community College Library at 11 a.m. on Wednesday to discuss the 3+1 program that DACC has in cooperation with Franklin University. And that takes us to the end of our time for this Tuesday, November 4th. My name is Craig, and as always, it's been a pleasure to read for you, and I hope that you have a splendid day. Take care.